The Education Gadfly Show starts now.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, who knew from the very beginning that that K-Fed wasn't man enough for Britney Spears, Rick Hess. Rick, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's good to be here, Mike. Welcome back from the land below.
Thank you very much. I had a wonderful time in Argentina, 8 days there in the beautiful city of Buenos Aires.
Yeah?
There for one of my best friend's wedding. We had a great time. They really know how to party down there.
Are they still angry about the Falklands?
They don't seem like it. I'm telling you, these people are friendly. They know how to live. They don't seem angry about anything.
Really?
Really.
Are they leaving any of their kids behind?
They are leaving many kids behind. But they're
not angry about that either.
They don't seem angry about it. Live and let live, my friend.
Nice.
I want you to know that we also have a special guest joining the discussion today, Dave DeShriver, good friend and an education advocate.
I am very happy to be here, Michael. Thank you very much. Thanks. Well, welcome back from.
You're off to a great start,
sick.
Dave.
What a great start that is.
Good.
Yeah. Advocate something, Dave.
Well, I'd like to advocate for Mike being back in the continental U.S.
Yeah.
How about that for a start, huh?
Very well. That was good.
And Dave brings diversity to the show.
He does. We found out before the show that Dave DeShriver, which, you know, sounds like what kind of German name?
You would think that's Belgium, but it's not.
Yeah, no. So not a Belgium name. That Dave actually was born in Mexico, right? And before he came to the United States, did not speak any English. So if he were a student today, that would make him in the Latino subgroup, we think, maybe. And also the ELL subgroup.
I don't know, but he looks like Wonder Bread. It's hard to think he would be in a Latino subgroup.
Yeah.
But it's all about the language and whether I can make achievement on that.
Yeah.
I like ELL.
And on top of that, we have another special producer today, Sarah Kim, our staff assistant, is taking the place of Jen Leischer. And Sarah is bringing extra diversity as well. Because she is also part of a protected minority group.
I love that we now have our little subgroups.
I know. So listeners, if you would like to tell us what subgroup you would be in if you were a student today under the No Child Left Behind Act, send us a letter at letters@edexcellence.net. We would love to hear from you. Let's get going. We're going to play the first ever game of Pardon the Gadfly with three people.
I don't think he could avoid it.
So the challenge, Rick, is you might actually have to say something of substance in response to some of these prompts.
I don't see how that comes. I figured I could say actually less of something.
You're right. That's right, because we have less time. We have the same time with more people. That's right. You're good at division, aren't you?
Well, actually, same time with more people.
Oh, right. See, math wasn't one of my strongest subjects. I would have been left behind.
You would have pulled down that Italian subgroup, baby.
All right, so we're going to do Pardon the Gadfly, and then we have a special interview with our special guest, Mr. Edgywonk himself, Andy Rotherham, who's going to give us his insight on the election returns. And finally, in-house weirdo Liam will serve up a stiff drink of education news of the weird. So let's play Pardon the Gadfly. It's each three of us. That's not a lot of time. Sarah, get us started.
Democrats take the House and could potentially take the Senate. So what kind of impact does this have on education, guys?
All right, Rick, what do you think?
Well, right now, the Dems have got 50 in the Senate, so it sounds like Tester just got confirmed. We're waiting to see on Webb. If they have the House and Senate, I mean, it strikes me that the administration is going to be looking for easy victories, places where they can work, and the Dems are going to be looking for easy stuff. And the 3 points where everybody has happy stories to tell each other is immigration, filling the donut hole in Medicare, and No Child Left Behind. So it seems to me that, you know, the likelihood that No Child Left Behind to actually get reauthorized in 2007 just went up significantly.
Well, I don't know. I don't necessarily agree. I mean, sure, I guess the likelihood went up perhaps a bit. But still, you know, the liberals in the Democratic caucus are vehemently opposed to this law. And the conservatives in the Republican caucus are vehemently opposed to this law. So I think it's going to be a very big challenge to try to piece together a majority for any kind of reauthorization. And I'm not really sure what you know, advocates for NCLB gain, you know, by trying to do this right now, instead of just pushing the law forward a couple more years.
And there's going to be a lot of tension between the White House, who wants choice in SES, and George Miller and Democrats, that will not want choice in SES. So what's going to be the legacy of the Bush administration?
This is true.
They want to push that. So are they going to give up on that? I don't know.
Do they want to push it? I mean, how serious is the administration actually about choice at this point in time?
I think they're very serious. Department of Education is advocating and monitoring very strictly on that issue. And so that command is coming from somewhere. So I think that is going to be one of the linchpin issues. If they can sort that out, maybe 2007, unless they can really work that out, after the presidential.
Oh, we are out of time. Very nice, Dave. I have to say, you know, You might be even more Pollyannish about federal policy than I am. I'm not sure what Rick thinks about that, huh?
Well, I forget what Pollyannish means.
Okay, what's the next topic, sir?
All right, topic two. After 7 years as the Gate Foundation's education director, Tom Vander Ark will step down next month. Under Vander Ark's guidance, the foundation has doled out $1.6 billion to numerous education projects across the country, not a few of which failed to bear much fruit, such as small schools. Still, he has often been praised for his focus on results and his willingness to experiment. So, will Vander Ark's replacement pick up where he leaves off? Or can we expect a real sea change in Gates' approach to education reform?
Well, first of all, I have to admit that when I saw the headline today about Rumsfeld basically getting fired and that Gates would be the new Secretary of Defense, I thought, oh my God, Bill Gates is the Secretary of Defense? That's so bold. That's really, well, yes, wrong Gates. Obviously.
That's visionary. That's very
that
visionary.
Wouldn't that be visionary? I don't know.
Well, that's... Speaking of visionary, I think that's what they need. So far the approach has been what? Wide mouth shotgun?
Yeah.
Try everything, see what sticks?
Yeah. Yeah, there
that's
you
been
go.
Working out very well.
So, yes, Tom Vander Ark stepping down. Rick, what do you think? You going to throw your hat in the ring here and try to get that job?
I'm going to throw Dave's hat in the ring. That's exactly. Yeah. I've got a notion.
You need strong leadership in that position. And what we're talking about is strong personnel, school leaders, leadership academies funded with tech money.
I hear the job interview right here, taking shape.
There it is. So, Rick, you wrote a whole book, or I guess you edited a book, about education philanthropy.
Yeah, no, editing's a lot easier.
Yeah. So, but from that volume, what do you think? Did you think the Gates Foundation can be credited with doing a decent job doling out this money, or has it just been a big flop like all the other big education philanthropies?
What? So which way are you leaning with that question?
That's not a leading question. What? I think I gave you an opportunity to say that no, Gates has been much smarter than all the rest about evaluating what they do and making mid-course corrections.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, the thing what people forget is that Gates is actually trying to do something that say the Annenberg folks never really try to do. Is Gates started with a strategy, which reminds me a lot of what Annenberg tried to do. Which is you throw a lot of money out at these nice people doing nice little things across the country, and you wait for these little beans to sprout. And in the last couple of years, they've actually tried to change strategy and become much more conscious about public policy, about waiting in the debates. Now, are they making the right calls? That's neither here nor there. But, you know, it's pretty interesting. And Vander Ark was in there at the beginning when I think they were making a bunch of, calls which turned out not to be particularly effective. And he's been there for part of this inflection, and so the person who's going to take it over, I think, is a really cool opportunity.
Dave, what do you think? Donald Rumsfeld, the head of the Gates Foundation? What do you think?
He's got the commitment. I think you should give him a shot.
Yeah? Okay. There you go. All right, Sarah, what's topic? I don't think Sarah agreed with that, by the way, Dave. I think perhaps she thinks that Mr. Rumsfeld is ready for a happy retirement.
Yes, I think I'd have to agree with that one, actually.
Okay, what's our last topic?
Because he's done enough or because you're sick of him?
I don't think I'm going to comment. Might not be appropriate, my response here for this show.
You know, a lot of women find Donald Rumsfeld very sexy.
Yes, remember he was the rum stud for a while before everything went bad.
I think I can categorically say that I'm not one of them.
Okay,
our final topic. In Buffalo, New York, 8th graders are required to apply to high schools, many of which specialize in specific programs such as horticulture, culinary arts, and aquatic ecology. Buffalo has struggled with truancy problems, and we discussed that a few weeks back. And this seems like a good way to get kids excited about school. On the other hand, isn't 8th grade a little too early to be asking kids to pick a career path? And won't all these specialized schools divert attention away from the core curriculum?
Well, what is aquatic ecology?
That's a really good question. Study.
Like underseas ecology?
Sure.
So in Buffalo, do they have a lot of like underseas environments where the kids can go
they're
study?
They're on a Great Lake now, aren't they? Dave, you're from that part of the country.
Are they? Of course they're on a Great Lake. They are on a waterfall on a great lake as well.
Yeah, so there you go. They study the waterfall.
Falls. Now, that's a pretty limited environment to work in, though. I mean, how many waterfalls are there that these kids are going to locate?
So horticulture. All right.
Anyway,
Can we talk about Buffalo again?
Horticulture.
Right. Come on. We didn't even talk about anything. Give me that buzzer back. All right, horticulture, culinary arts. Look, I mean, culinary arts. So what, they're going to teach kids to be chefs? I'm a little worried that they're teaching kids to be busboys for the rest of their life, and I don't think that's what our education system should be all about. You know, some of these voc ed advocates, like our News of the Weird friend Liam, want kids to be choosing their careers like we're Germany or something when they're 13. Don't you think we need to make sure everybody is prepared when they're 18 to be able to go to college if they want to? If they don't want to, they can make that choice. But we shouldn't pigeonhole them when they're younger.
I think 18 is a little early to be choosing a career, though. Whenever I meet these kids who are 19 and know what they want to do, that just annoy the hell out of me.
Yeah.
I like the kids who don't know what they want to do till they're like 28 or 30.
Yeah.
Is it possible this is just a red herring? I mean, everyone has intra-district choice. They just put a brochure out and they say they put a class to it. But what's so special? Maybe they're hiding from other issues you just don't want to tackle.
Yes.
Dave, do you know how hard it was to find education news this week with the election going on and everything else? I mean, sometimes you have to reach a little bit and, you know, yeah. Look, you know, you got, you know, these education writers have to write about something.
They're so diverting attention.
There
like
it was.
That.
Dave DeShriver seeing right through us.
No, he was seeing right through Buffalo.
Yeah, I think they're dropping big issues.
There it is.
Oh, there's the buzz.
Wow, that was a special edition of Pardon the Gadflies.
Dave brings a lot of substance,
Dave,
man.
Dave does, thank you.
That... Well, the way it kicked it off was superb.
Yes.
That's true. All right, well, it is now time to turn to our interview with Mr. Edgy Wonk, Andy Rotherham, about the election this week. Let's take a listen.
We are here today with Andy Rotherham of Education Sector, former Clinton administration official, Clinton White House official. Andy, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
It's great to be here, my virgin Gadfly Show appearance.
Very excited. Well, Andy, we saved you up for a very special day, of course, post-election wrap-up. So let's talk about the election and the results. Obviously, we know right now that the House is going to be controlled by the Democrats, and it looks like the Senate will be as well. What do you think? Is this going to have an impact on federal education policymaking in the next couple of years?
Well, I think it's going to have a big impact on politics and policymaking overall in the next few years. 12 years have gone by, and it's been in some ways a pretty rough 12 years. And so I think a lot of people, as evidenced by the vote yesterday, are excited to see a change. So there's a lot of excitement, I think, around education. There's a lot of excitement, but I think it's mostly misplaced. I don't see sort of this portending huge changes around education policy. Mainly because education policy and politics are interesting today because they don't sort of graft cleanly onto partisan alliances and so forth. They really transcend party lines. And so you have sort of, you know, liberal Democrats who are in some ways much tougher on accountability than conservative Republicans and people who are in different places on all sorts of issues. So
right.
It's actually, I think, going to continue to be very interesting.
All right. So let's talk about George Miller. He's going to be the chairman of the House Education Committee. He was one of the architects of No Child Left Behind. So what does this mean? Does this make NCLB reauthorization more likely? And what do you think Miller's going to be pushing for?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about George Miller is I think he's going to be a terrific chairman. And, you know, he was a Watergate baby and all that. And he's a reformer at heart. And so he sort of gets it at a gut level. And that sort of really drives him. He's very distrustful of many of the status quo institutions and really views federal policy as a strong lever. And as such, you know, he's a strong proponent of No Child Left Behind. He's skeptical of a lot of the ideas to change it, in some cases, you know, weaken parts of it. So I think, you know, he'd be fine with a No Child Left Behind reauthorization, but he's going to want to have one that remains tough on accountability. And that's the rub. That really splits the Democratic caucus. It splits the Republican caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems to me that, you know, politics being what it is and politicians being what they are, they tend to want to put off difficult and thorny decisions, particularly as we're moving into, you know, the presidential campaign started today. And so as we're moving into that, I think it's going to be a desire to push off some of these hard decisions. And that means things like No Child Left Behind. There may be a lot of noise and talk about them, but we're probably not going to see real action, whereas issues like higher ed and so forth seem like more likely candidates
for a
lot of attention.
So maybe on No Child Left Behind, it's a matter of people putting out markers, floating interesting ideas that the presidential candidates can incorporate.
I think that's going to be part of it. If the presidential debate will serve as something of a proxy around some No Child Left Behind ideas, you're going to see people trying to pander to different groups and put ideas out there. And I think you're going to see a genuine effort on the Hill to sort through some of these issues, and you'll see hearings and so forth, particularly in the wake of the Aspen Commission reports. There'll certainly be a lot of discussion about it, but it's really hard to see, you know, and especially in looking at the legislative calendar, they're just not here all that much, and we're moving into a political season very quickly.
Yeah.
It's hard to see a bill the size and complexity of No Child and sort of the political contentiousness of it getting through. And frankly, for all the folks that want to gut it or eviscerate it or use the euphemism, fix it, a fast No Child Left Behind reauthorization probably isn't in their interest anyway, because if it does happen quickly, it'll be a pretty much status quo reauthorization. It'll mean there was a deal between the White House and Congress to move something through pretty quickly.
Right. Rick Hess is nodding his head affirmatively. Rick, who's an analyst, but you know what? People does not go out and vote. Can you believe that, Andy, how spineless Rick Hess is, that he wouldn't even cast his vote? In that big Virginia election.
I know, and Rick works at the American Enterprise Institute. That means by not voting, he is in small part to blame for what President Bush characterized accurately as the thumping that Republicans took yesterday.
I think that's exactly
thumping.
Right.
You know, what I take out of yesterday's election is that it is now you're still allowed to write books and run for Congress.
Yeah.
I think it's nice to know that a man can win even if he's written, right, world-renowned fiction.
Yeah.
It's reassuring.
Yeah, good. With sex scenes and everything. Huh?
And pretty weak sex scenes if you read it, too. I was like, man, where's the good stuff?
Okay, yeah, well, okay, let's talk about the state level. The Democrats also now have a majority of the governor's houses. Some of the big races, of course, Ohio, Ted Strickland, who was definitely running with the strong support of the teachers unions, came out strong against charter schools and pretty strong against accountability, so it seemed. What do you think, Andy? Are the Democrats going weak on accountability and on public school choice?
I think you've got a whole bunch of new Democratic governors. That's in all the attention to Congress. That's another place that Democrats did very well that hasn't gotten that much attention. I think it's too soon to tell what it's going to mean, but frankly, at the state level, it's a lot easier to be in the opposition on education than to govern, because when you govern, you actually have to make the tough decisions, and you're going to see sort of Eliot Spitzer, the new Democratic governor in New York, Deval Patrick, the new Democratic governor in Massachusetts, Strickland in Ohio. They have, vibrant charter school sectors, active issues around accountability and so forth, and actually managing those and owning those is a lot more difficult than challenging them. And I think actually for the Democratic Party will be good to be controlling more of these state houses, because it'll force people to confront these issues and force the party, I think, to get more serious about coming up with creative ideas and creative ways to address these problems.
All right. Well, one last question. You say that the 2008 election begins today. So tell us, Mr. Edgy Wonk, who is the Democratic candidate going to be for president, and is he or she going to have national standards as a part of their platform?
The national standards debate. I'd be very surprised. The Democrats, run a risk of overreading the mandate yesterday, and I do not think by tossing out the Republicans, the voters were clamoring for national education standards, and that issue remains as contentious as always. I don't know who the nominee is going to be, but if you take a look, there's a strong, strong bench, and hopefully you're going to have a lot of ideas and a lot of reform ideas around education and a real active sort of ideas primary leading up to the real primary. I'm optimistic that we'll see some new directions proposed and so forth, and there'll be a lively debate. And on the Republican side, some of the folks who are looking at the Republican nomination, particularly Mitt Romney, the former governor up there in Massachusetts, have interesting ideas on education, are engaged on the issue. So to the extent that this election may be a sleeper for education, the 2008 election may be actually very interesting in both parties.
All right. So I hear in that answer, Andy, that you're saying the national testing and standards are going to be a big part of the 2008 campaign. I agree. Wholeheartedly.
You probably never heard me express any skepticism about that, the political salience of that idea. So why would I start now?
Exactly. Good, good, good. Well, Andy, thanks so much for joining the show. You are no longer a podcast virgin. And I hope that you come join us again.
And I don't even feel violated. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Andy. Thanks again.
So, Rick, first of all, I have to say, Andy, of course, has frequently disparaged this podcast, saying that listening to it is like watching ferrets being tortured. So, you know what? It's good to have him come on the show. Maybe he won't say such nasty things about us anymore.
I gotta say, it's not an unreasonable thing to say, though, is it?
Especially, that last game of Pardon the Gadfly was pretty much
that
like
was
very torturing,
and some of our interviews with like the computers and stuff.
I still think that was a great interview.
So
what do you think about what Andy had to say, or did he say anything?
Yeah, he's the Edgewonk, baby.
Okay, Liam, what is weird this week?
What's weird, Mike, are the goings on in Laguna Beach, California. While most community school boards answer questions from angry parents regarding topics such as curriculum, school funding, and classroom safety, Laguna Beach parents are angry about MTV. Laguna Beach is a community of languorous palm trees, multi-million-dollar houses nestled into chalky cliffs, a quaint downtown dotted with art galleries, boutiques, and coffee shops.
Liam, are you trying to put our listeners to sleep?
And a steady undercurrent of teenage vice.
Ooh.
That sounds like a good TV show.
And thanks to the 3-year-old MTV reality show Laguna Beach, The Real OC, which each year follows a new cadre of the town's high school seniors and documents their every move, that sordid lifestyle is broadcast in the homes of millions. But now, parents in Laguna Beach are fighting back, and the candidates for the Laguna Beach School Board find themselves barraged with complaints and questions about how and why MTV was allowed to bring its cameras into the town's high school. School board candidates have responded by accusing parents of buying alcohol, which catalyzes their children's debaucherous social lives, and of allowing their prescription medications to fall into teenage hands. For its part, MTV contends that it would have filmed Laguna's capricious youth glitterati with or without the school board's consent. We'll continue to monitor these pressing education developments.
Wow. Wow. Where's KFED when you need them, huh?
So what do you think, Rick? I mean, can you really believe that MTV can't just bring its cameras into a school without permission, can they?
No, right? I mean, you need – it's the same issue that we had when the teacher and her kids broke into the graveyard in West Virginia a while back.
Right?
No.
It was not West Virginia, by the way.
Or somewhere.
It was North Carolina.
It should have been West Virginia.
It's outside of Richmond.
It was Virginia.
I knew it was something like that.
Disparaging the mountain state.
You know, no, they can't. But on the other hand, they could camp outside just off school grounds, probably 100 feet or something, and then follow the kids. And if you ever watch Laguna Beach, you know, the real OC, so much of this stuff takes place anyway in bars and at kids' houses. They don't really need access to the school.
Rick Hess, are you saying that you watch a reality television show about high school kids getting drunk and messing around?
Yeah. Doesn't everybody?
Rick, you don't have anything better to do with your time than watch all this junk television.
I like to think of it as cultural anthropology. Ugh. If we're going to be making policy that affects the behavior cognitive development of our nation's youth, don't we really need to be in touch with our nation's youth?
Well, yes, and I think high-minded people will watch The Wire for that reason, but I'm not so sure about
that. Yeah, but The Wire is fictional.
Well, that is, thank goodness, all the time that we have for this week. We will be back next week. Until then, don't forget to check out the original Education Gadfly at www.edexcellence.net. I'd like to thank Dave DeShriver for coming on the show today, for Sarah Kim for pitching in. Until next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.